Could the nation that back in 2008 fought a brief war against Vladimir Putin be giving up now on its EU dream? There were packed crowds outside Georgia's parliament this Monday to protest what the pro-Western president calls a stolen election. We'll scrutinize Saturday's vote, which gave another outright majority to the Georgia Dream Party, billionaire former Prime Minister Bidzina Ivanishvili. His side's campaign employed the "look what happened to Ukraine" argument, warning against alienating the Kremlin. What next for Georgia? What next for the rest of the former Soviet space? A lot, of course, hinges on what happens now in Ukraine. From 2008 to the present, is Vladimir Putin by increments fulfilling his dream of recreating a greater Russia? On that score, what to make of Hungary's illiberal leader, Viktor Orban, rushing in to offer his congratulations to the winners in Tbilisi? Today in the France 24 debate, Georgia's elections, Putin's orbit. With us from the Georgian capital, Marika Mikiashvili, member of the DROA political party that's part of the opposition Coalition for Change. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Also with us from Tbilisi, researcher Hans Gutbrod, associate professor at Ilya State University. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Historian and former Georgian diplomat Lasha Atmuzuri, excuse me, I butchered your name. Your books include, your latest is Fighting for Ukraine. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Christine Dugoin-Clément, researcher with the Observatory on Artificial Intelligence at Paris 1 Panthéon-Sorbonne University. Good to see you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Your reactions, by the way, we reached out to representatives of the Georgia Dream Party and regret their absence from this conversation. Your reactions on the hashtag F24Debate. Yeah, this is not the result that exit polls Saturday were predicting. Since the first tallies came in, the calls to protest, as you can see from the final result, almost final, have since followed. Emerald Maxwell has more.
Thousands rally around the parliament building in response to the president's call. These demonstrators are refusing to accept the results of Saturday's parliamentary elections, calling them rigged. The Georgian president had initially declared the victory of the pro-European opposition based on exit polls. But after the ruling party declared that it had won, Salome Zurabishvili alleged that the vote was rigged using sophisticated methods with Russian help.
You didn't lose the elections. They stole your vote. And they also tried to steal your future. But no one has that right, and you will not give that right to anyone. I can promise you that I will stand with you till the end on this European path.
The Georgian Dream Party, which has ruled since 2012, has become increasingly authoritarian in the past year and is accused of wanting to distance Georgia from EU and NATO membership as it moves the country back into the orbit of its former imperial master, Russia.
We're here to say out loud that Georgia is a very European country and our future is in EU, in the West.
It is not Georgian dream in reality, and because of this reason we are here to protect our rights, our European perspective and equality and democracy.
Russian presidential spokesman Dmitry Peskov firmly rejected all accusations of interference, which he described as totally unfounded.
Marika Mikiashvili, I know you were present in the streets of Tbilisi this Monday. First, let's go back to Saturday. What was it like election day?
According to pre-election polls, according to the atmosphere in the country, the atmosphere of change, we were very much expecting victory. And also, we were hoping that the turnout would overpower the all sorts of election manipulation that could be employed. So when we were seeing a very high turnout, hour by hour, almost like every 3 hours, let's say, we were quite hopeful that apparently people were really voting for change and mobilized for change. The entire day was quite optimistic. Then the exit polls also showed a confident opposition victory, and we were almost celebrating. Then what emerged was that the Central Election Commission put a very different results compared to, for example, Edison Research poll. And that was never the case during previous elections. Edison Research polls and Central Election Commission results were more or less similar.
In an election, there's many ways to rig it. Where did it happen? In the polling stations, or when the ballots were centralized?
Well, there was a lot of pre-election manipulation and pressure, intimidation, which the observer missions, international observer missions, also spoke about. And NDI outright said that the pre-election campaign did not meet the minimum democratic standards. But during these elections, unlike previous elections, election rigging also happened on the election day. So it was not simply manipulation before elections, but it was actual rigging of votes. So what we are thinking now, and we are gathering more and more evidence every minute, is that there was a major fraud with the ID cards and multiple voting and ballot stuffing. So we think that up to 15, even 20% of total votes could be added to the Georgian Dream government out of air with use of with multiple voting with single ID. And we have big questions with the integrity of the electronic vote devices. It was the first time that Georgia voted through electronic devices. And so we are aware of all sorts of fraud types with paper-based voting. But it was new to us, the electronic device. And we were afraid that there was a risk of fraud. We were simply not considering. And that is what happened.
And so do you have a legal recourse? Are you appealing are you putting it before the Electoral Commission, before the courts?
That is not the focus that we are having now. Our key message is that the elections have been stolen and that it was Russia's special operation. It was Russia conducting these elections. This is what the opposition says. This is what the president says, who is, by the way, French-born. And so our key message now is that we are not entering this illegitimate Russian parliament. We are boycotting, as an opposition, this parliament. And our only demand is that we have new elections conducted by International Election Commission, not this Georgian Election Commission that is fully controlled by state security services, which on itself is fully controlled by Russian security services. And the only negotiations we will be having with Bidzina Ivanishvili, the oligarch behind the government, is about these elections that will be conducted by International Election Commission.
Hans Gutbrod, let me bring in Hans Gutbrod on this.
We will not be recounted. We will not enter into some petty negotiations that they should give us a few percentage more. That will not be the case. And if I may also add, so now they have 54%. It is my deep belief, my personal belief, that they would be much better off with around 45-46%. When the fraud would not be that clear. What Georgian Dream always benefits from is gray area and ambiguity. They lose in black and white situations. So they would much rather have 46% when people could think that, overall, it's somewhat more believable, and they would some mechanisms still be able to form government with 46%. But now even Georgian Dream supporters do not believe that they have 54. I think what happened is that they thought the opposition would have even bigger turnout, and they tried very hard to beat our largest possible turnout. And now it's in a way worse for them because no one.
In a way worse for them. Let me bring in Hans Gutbrot now. Hans, what did you see on Saturday, and your thoughts on what you've seen and what happens next?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's important to see the big picture, and the big picture is indeed that I think many people feel that the European future, so to speak, has been stolen from the Georgian people. It has been stolen both in the campaign style, which was incredibly divisive and vicious and demonizing the opposition and essentially threatening the electorate. And then we saw it in the actual election day itself, with results that you cannot explain in any kind of sensible way. They don't tally with the pre-election surveys. They don't tally with the Edison poll, as Marika has pointed out, that in the past has had a very solid track record. And now we have a deviation of 13%. So it's way outside the margin of error. So that's, in many ways, it's a grave crisis. What do you do if a government no longer plays by the rules? It hasn't played by the rules for a long time, but that's maybe one of the most dramatic instances in the last 12 years.
And so at this point in time, Hans Gutbrot, your reaction when you hear Marika saying that there's no point going to the Electoral Commission, the dice are loaded if you go there?
Well, I mean, overall, I would characterize what's happened in Georgia in the last few years as a coup. It's been an unlawful seizure of power of all institutions. And the more you know about Georgia, the more extreme that actually gets. And there is not a single museum director that's not kind of directly subordinated in the vertical. And so that means the courts are entirely captured. The Central Election Commission is captured. The National Bank, which was an institution that many people took pride in for many years, it was widely recognized, is now fully subordinated under the executive, even though originally it was meant to be independent. And if I say executive, that's a polite way of putting it. In fact, it is, as Marika pointed out, it's more kind of the state security services. So relying on institutions to rectify the problem, the very institutions that created that would be wildly optimistic. I think outsiders can be tempted to think that that's a quick fix. It isn't.
Lasha Utmazuri, there's been in Georgia several instances where democracy's been tested. At this point, judging on the past track record, what happens next?
Many things depend on Europe and the United States, because in Georgia, there is one poll, it's president, but she can't do anything alone. So she needs support from European Union and from United States. We see already this, but how far they can go? This is the question, the big question.
All right, the European Commission, quick to react, freezing the EU's accession process for Georgia that it just approved a few months back.
Some of the narratives used during this campaign has been clear and directly inspired from the Russian propaganda. We have directly addressed disinformation narratives spread by the Georgian actors. We have stressed that Georgia EU accession process is currently de facto halted as a direct result of the steps taken by the Georgian government.
So the Georgia EU accession process de facto halted. Will that have an impact?
Listen, with this, the idea to bring this law, Ivanishvili, he shoot in his foot. Because without this law, I'm sure that he, at least all surveys made in the end of November were saying that Ivanishvili was and his party was winning the elections. Because the disenchantment of politics is a huge in Georgia. It's huge. There is no party. Marika, I'm sorry, but I don't see any party who, in the opposition or in government, of course, nobody who was projecting, who was giving a project for today, tomorrow. I called Ivanishvili's party, I called Mrs. Rosa from Roman Gary's novel. You know, she's a survivor. She's a survivor from Auschwitz, and she's babysitting of prostitutes' children. And when these children are behaving very bad, she's keeping a Hitler's photo, and she's looking at it to imagine that something worse can happen than these children. So this was the way government was talking to the opposition. But opposition was also not talking about future. For example, Charles Michel's, when he arrived, the biggest opposition party didn't sign Charles Michel's agreement. There are many others. They didn't get back to the parliament. So there are many things.
And on that point, the question of the fact that you saw the score for Georgia Dream go way up in the provinces, far from the capital, is that a sign that there is a dichotomy between the city and the provinces in Georgia?
Yes, but also there is kind of generational, you know. For example, take France. If you forbid in France elder people than 64 to vote, we would have in the second tour here Marine Le Pen versus Mélenchon. He had Macron had no way to get, and so consensual. There was no place for consensual politics in Georgia. There was hysterization from both sides, from opposition and from government side. But what happened? Let me say, from the young people from 18 to 32. 20% was only saying that they were going to vote in the end of 23. But what happened? They understood that when European Union have frozen this process, they understood that the Georgian dream, they have stolen this Herbert Wells time machine. Because they could buy for 50 euros plane ticket and travel to United States, to Europe, and to study in Europe for free. And suddenly they see this guy who is saying, no, it's finished. So, because it's very important, you know, as just 2 minutes and I will finish. There was a big sociologist who died, into an American sociologist, Wright, who said that for decades he was studying the kind of future long future far futures, and he was saying more it's rooted in today, more people feel that either I have to vote today and decide, or if it's wrong and it's everything is left. What happened? It's that it was a sensation that either today or never.
All right. So deep roots to what's happening today. Strong reactions, as you saw, from most European capitals too, not just Brussels. Poland's foreign minister calls the contested outcome of the Georgian election, quote, part of Russia's hybrid war against the entire West. If the European Commission was so quick to act at this time with that de facto suspension, it feels like it's in part to preempt Hungary's leader, who even before the results were announced was crowing about a victory for Georgia Dream on the social medium formerly known as Twitter. Viktor Orban, in fact, going one better, traveling to Tbilisi for a two-day visit, this Christine Dugoin, while Hungary holds the rotating presidency of the European Council. What are the optics on that?
This is always something which is quite perturbing and even quite problematic, is the role of Hungary and of its president, Viktor Orban, on the policy. And it's very interesting if we are considering the Georgian case, because the ruling party is always sending a quite mixed message, which is quite a lie, because they are selling that they are a pro-European country, but not that Europe, you know, with the that Europe. And they are selling that the Europe that they are for is more traditionalist, because you have a rebound of the classical Moscow rhetoric on LGBTQ plus and these kind of things. And they are using Orban, saying the Europe that we are for, that we are close to, is more the one that Mr. Orban wants, which is something very problematic. So they are using each other's in order to say, we are not against Europe, we are pro-European. And it's very funny, because if ever you have a look at the ads, there is something like mixed in between the Georgian Dream logo and the flag of European Union with the blue and the yellow. So they are mixing the message. And the idea at the end, but under the control of America, and hence we are in Tiflis, the question is at the end saying, we are not against Europe, but Europe doesn't want us, and we doesn't want this kind of Europe. And if you are going back in time, when in June 2022, you had the decorrelation in between Moldova, Ukraine, and Georgia for the candidacy of European Union, and Charles Michel explain that two...
This is the president of the European Council.
Explains that two main points have to be, you know, Georgia need to tick the boxes. And one of the points was collaborating with civil society. And what happened? The government passed the law for foreign agents, which is called the Russian laws. Basically, if you are someone from the civil society, you can be targeted as a foreign agent, meaning that you have no collaboration with civil society. So just by passing this law was explaining that they are not going on the path of Europe, which is the vow of lots of Georgians.
And you heard Lasha there talking about, there is irregularities, but there's also a disillusion with politics that laid the groundwork for this. How much of it is down to foreign meddling in this case, what the results we saw on Saturday?
Which is very interesting is that election was an unprecedented election observation effort. You had something like 2,000 observers for different NGOs, and they quote a lot of frauds and irregularities. So, I mean, they had the traditional ones, the good old ones, if I may say, like mass ballot stuffing have been observed, like threatening voters, like tracking voters, voter transportation, but they also observed, and they are writing reports on that, that they had ID card confiscation, and that have been sent by your other NVD, but there is also a mass data collection before the election of the voters. And when you are using this data collection, you can trick the electronic votes, and you can change the game. And there is another thing, maybe, because you were talking about the disillusion of politics of the population. There is also something that I think, but under your control, that Ivanishvili government is pushing on. He is showing him like the man of peace, and he is making a kind of dichotomy in between peace and liberty. And in a way, is what do you want? Do you want peace, but into the Moscow, let's say, spectrum? Or do you want liberty, but with war? Basically, it's not said that clearly, but it is always the way that he is explaining, and he is showing him as the man of peace by opposition to Saakashvili, former president, who was president of war. So there is always this kind of things, and it is something that is deeply rooted in Georgian mind, because if ever you go to the treaty, a very old treaty that have been seen in 1783, if I'm not mistaken, but under your control, by Irakli II, and it's the first time when Georgian asked for Russian protection. It was under against the Persian government. And even at these times, they were not really helped or protected by Russia. But it was the very beginning of the kind of imperialism. And we are already in this kind of imperialism, and you are afraid of being confronted to a war or social protest or these kind of things. And you have always a kind of ghost, the Maidan ghost. Look at what could happen. And you had lots of ads who show like pictures of Ukraine with churches, schools that have been completely blown up. And on the other part of the ads, you had the same kind of monuments in Georgia, pretty clear, neat, and, you know, not destroyed at all. And the question was, what do you want?
Mm. At the center of it all, as you say, Georgia dream leader, Bidzina Ivanishvili, a billionaire who, by the way, made his fortune in Russia in the cowboy capitalism days of the collapse of the Soviet Union. He helped bankroll Boris Yeltsin's 1996 re-election before returning home and going into politics in his own right. Emerald Maxwell has more.
Long accused of pulling the strings behind the scenes, Bidzina Ivanishvili came out of the shadows earlier this year to campaign for his Georgian Dream Party ahead of the election and push anti-Western conspiracy theories.
Either we choose a government that will serve you, the Georgian people, the Georgian society, our homeland, and will take care of the country, or you choose foreign agents who will only carry out the orders of foreign countries.
Now Georgia's richest man, estimated to be worth around $7.6 billion, or a quarter of the country's GDP. Bidzina Ivanishvili lives in a massive steel and glass mansion perched above Tbilisi, a long way from his humble roots in a poor rural village in western Georgia, in what was then the Soviet Union. After making his fortune in Russia in the 1990s, amassing huge wealth in metals as Soviet state-owned assets were privatized, he founded his own political party and in 2012 became Georgia's prime minister, serving for just over a year before officially retiring from politics. But in the background, his critics say he held tight to the reins.
He's turned Georgia into a private company of which he is 100% the owner. He has appointed managers who he can hire and fire whenever he wants. And they have to do their homework. And that's how he runs the country.
Ivanishvili's party initially pursued a liberal pro-Western policy agenda, but also sought not to provoke its neighbor.
We will not be able to change Russia. It would be better for us to change ourselves. We have to try to establish relations with Russia the way it is.
Over the last year, Ivanishvili's party has become increasingly authoritarian as it's drifted closer to Russia. Ahead of the election, Ivanishvili vowed to ban opposition parties should his party win, and played on Georgia's wariness of conflict with its neighbor, with claims that the West was trying to drag Georgia into the Russia-Ukraine war.
Marika Mikhailishvili, is that dichotomy real between those who want to look towards the former Soviet world and those that want to look towards the EU, and the ones that have, as you heard Christine Duguin describe, more conservative social values? Is Georgia a divided nation?
I'll answer it first shortly, and then I'll elaborate. No, Georgia is not a divided nation on the issue of European integration. 85% consistently wants European integration. And Georgia is probably one of the most loyal nations to the European idea. We see it as our civilizational choice, the return to Europe, where we belong, and from which we've been cut off through centuries of invasions and so on. However, yes, there is a generational divide, mostly, to a degree also urban-rural, but mostly I would say generational. But if you ask most elderly people and most rural people who might still vote for the Georgian Dream government, they also want European Union, so we are not divided on that. However, they buy the propaganda that somehow it is still possible for us to have European integration with the Georgian Dream government. And also, ultimately, I personally believe that voting for the Georgian Dream government is simply being comfortable with this post-Soviet corrupt nepotistic lifestyle,
or can I interject here? Is it a question of people remember 2008 when there was that brief war between Russia and Georgia, and they are spooked by a return of that?
I would say that yes, of course, the fear of war plays some role. But the Georgian Dream needed to deploy a variety of different narratives to get some votes. It's not one single narrative that could help them completely. But the results are not even actual people voting for them decisively. It's, as we said, actual electoral fraud. However, what I wanted to say that the fact that the Georgian Dream needs to lie to people that they want European integration underlines how united the people of Georgia are about the European idea. Because if the Georgian society was split about the European idea, then the Georgian Dream would not even need to lie that they want European integration to stay in power. It's simply impossible for any party to stay in power if they don't want European, if they don't say that they want European integration. So that's why the ambiguity and gray zones is always what helps the Georgian Dream. And the clarity is the medicine, both clarity from the opposition as well as from abroad. And I'm very happy that our European partners and American partners have been increasingly clear this month, because this diplomatic language is not what helps the people of Georgia in a narrative. So overall, no, it's not a divided nation, but unfortunately, some part of the nation falls to this falls to some propaganda and does not fully comprehend how things are, and that is exactly why we need clarity.
Hans Gutbrot, is the European Union perhaps selling something it cannot deliver? I ask the question because of, well, when you look at a map, Moldova, Ukraine, they have physical borders with the European Union. Georgia does not.
I think the Georgian people have in many ways a better understanding of what the European Union is than many people in the European Union today, because they understand that it's an aspiration of living better. It's an aspiration of a government and a system that broadly respects the people. It's an aspiration that you don't have corporations just running over individuals or a handful of greedy people who determine everything they want. And inside the European Union, people have gotten very cynical in many cases and have taken things very much for granted. And I think
was it wrong of the European Union to start this accession process? Because is the European Union ready to go to the mat for Georgia when, like I say, just physical, you know, geography, it's far away from the rest of the bloc?
Well, look, I mean, in the end, political processes are first up to the Georgian citizens, and this is what it's about. And I think we sometimes throw various things in there together. In matter of fact, this is a more complex discussion. The geopolitical situation of Georgia is actually much better than it's often described if we work in really simple, very, very crude patterns. Georgia is an essential corridor for Turkey to get into Central Asia. It is an essential corridor for Kazakhstan and Central Asian countries to get their things out. So geostrategically, Georgia has actually a lot more friends than if you just reduce it to an idea of how far is Brussels from Tbilisi. And we need to bring that nuance in. That's a complicated discussion, but we need to bring it in.
Maybe we can bring it in with a map. All the while the Georgia Dream Party's been appeasing for some, in cahoots for others on this panel, with the Kremlin, Georgia's government's increasingly bypassing Russia. Here you see in blue on this map are oil and gas routes that, again, as you see, they bypass Russia. In yellow, it's the Trans-Caspian International Transport Route. Cargo traffic exports on this corridor soared 65% last year. When you look at that map, Lasha Okmazuri, you know, it's the question, you know, just as the Georgia Dream Party says one thing about Europe and does another, in practical manner of speaking, is it for business reasons drawing, pulling closer or away from Russia?
Well, from one side, I think European Union, first to go back maybe to another question you asked, it's about values. It's about values, and because of that, European Union asks some liberal minority rights to be respected in Georgia. What's about geography? It's a big disadvantage and advantage for Georgia. Disadvantage to be among big empires, and advantage to have a profit from it, if you are quite smart. Why European Union started this with us? It's because of the war in Ukraine, and the biggest shame I really feel, it's about that posters Christine was talking about in Tbilisi, where you see when they are speculating about Ukrainian tragedy. This is the biggest shame, of course. But what is they are doing? You asked about villages and about provinces. They go and they say that you, majority, you could be threatened by minorities, by these laws. By the way, this law, which was anti-discrimination law, which was presented by Dream in Georgian Dream in 2014, during the debate, intra-debate in the party, he told me after that Ivanishvili was talking with us, I thought he was kind of LGBT rights defender. At that time, it enraged him. And he was defending.
It was in his interest at the time, and then he just switched sides.
At that time, big opposition.
Okay, but watch what they do, not what they say. My question is the former Soviet space organizing itself, again, economically, away from Russia?
We are helping very much Russia with the war effort, in the war effort. What the Americans are saying. Like, unfortunately, Ivanishvili is helping to bring some elements for his weaponry, at least for luxury, like cars. We have some data, information based on true information that they can import, re-import many luxury things from Georgia to Russia. So,
Christine Duguin-Clément, this idea and the narrative sold by Moscow is we're the ones advancing. Look, for instance, there was that referendum that took place last week in Moldova, and it didn't go the way the incumbent pro-EU president wanted. There's now the elections in Georgia. Look, you see, you can't stop the march of pro-Russian sentiment inside the former Soviet space. But again, I ask the question, is that jibe with the facts on the ground?
At least it's the narrative that they are selling and that they want the other country to buy, Western countries, but also what is oftenly called the Global South, even if I don't like the expression. I think that we have to see the big pictures one more time. And it's not only about Georgia. It's also about Moldova. It's also about Ukraine. And there are three who are candidates to the European Union. But basically, what is doing Russia? Russia is pushing its imperialism on the other country, of course, of the post-Soviet area, but not only. Because you've got to make a link also with the Kazan BRICS summit that took place in Kazan last week. Why? What Russia is doing. It is trying to explain to the other country worldwide, not only for Westerners, not only for post-Soviet area, that they are a credible alternative to Western way of life, to Western society, to Western whatever you want. Basically, it is what they are selling. And considering about Georgia, as you say, it is a country that is very close geographically from Russia. And basically, it has been used in order to bypass a lot of sanctions. That's why you are explaining some products, like luxury products and else. So they don't want Georgia to escape from the hands of Moscow. Yes, of course. Concerning the pipeline of gas and oil that you were showing at NO, there is something which is definitely very interesting. It's at the end of this year, the contract in between Ukraine after gas in Ukraine and Gazprom was come at the end, and Kyiv explained that they won't go on a renewal of these contracts a few years ago. Basically, it will get some issues for some European countries, Austria, Italy, and others. Hungary also and else.
In Hungary, yeah.
Also, so what are the options? And at no European Union try to deal with as an alternative like Azerbaijan. The question is, which pipe are you going to use? And the point is, some of the pipes are already full. So you can use them more than what they are at now.
Right.
So, you know, there is a lot of traction. And if ever Russia can prove that on the polling station, by the vote, society decide to choose Russia instead of European Union, because they are not only choosing like a regime or an economy, they are choosing a society, a model of society. You were talking about values. It is a signal that could be also sent for the countries of the BRICS, for African countries, that they are trying to link with them.
And as you say last week, plenty of signals sent from that BRICS summit. The battle of hearts and minds is one thing. The battle for Ukraine is another. All sides waiting to see if Donald Trump wins next week in the United States. They're also having an election. This is Vladimir Putin at that BRICS summit when asked about Trump's boast that he can sit both sides down on day one and find a solution.
Mr. Trump was recently talking about his desire to do everything possible to put an end to the conflict in Ukraine. I think he means it. Of course, we welcome the statements of this kind, whoever makes them.
Marika Mikhaelishvili, are Georgians paying attention to the elections in the United States?
Yes, of course, very much so. It's the case every time there are elections in the United States, because we understand that the United States is our crucial partner. To some degree, maybe even our independence has been sustained by the United States friendship with Georgia, because I'm sure Russia would want to do more with Georgia. So this year it seems especially crucial, of course, and to some degree it's very unfortunate that the parliamentary elections of Georgia always fall just days before the U.S. presidential elections. I truly hope that United States stances towards the Georgian dream are extremely tough, and I do have grounds to believe so. And I truly hope that it continues to be this way.
Reaction, because the State Department in the last minute saying that Washington is consulting with European partners about what an appropriate body would be to conduct investigations into Georgia's elections. Is that realistic? Do you see that happening? Some kind of outside independent panel swooping in?
Well, that would be an amazing demonstration of solidarity with people of Georgia. I don't believe I'm competent enough to know whether it is technically possible or something. But I'm sure if it's possible to erase all traces of meddling, the Georgian dream has already erased it by now. I just believe that as long as we are coordinated, we shall prevail.
Juan Clément?
Yeah, just one thing. There is another country at the border of European Union who have been the subject of fraud in the election poll. It's Belarus. And basically, the election haven't been recognized by European Union, but Lukashenko is still in place. So even
since August 2020.
Mm-hmm, so if ever European Union did not recognize the election, the question is, and so what? What are you doing? What is the next step? What are the next steps? Mm.
And that's the fodder for another conversation. Christine Duguay-Clément, I want to thank you so much. I want to thank as well Lasha Otmazuri. I want to thank Marika Mikhaelishvili for being with us from Tbilisi, as well as Hans Gutbrot. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.
Thank you.